Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. Live from Los Angeles, I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd. Man, what a show we got for you today. Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated will stop by in about 15 minutes. Brian Smith from the Houston Chronicle will join us next hour in the show. A lot of things going on. Trade in the NBA is a player who not long ago was actually the highest paid player in the NBA has been dealt. More on that to come. There's basically three kind of big emerging stories in the NBA. There is the somewhat mass exodus, it feels like, from the Boston Celtics. We'll cover that. The reality of what Danny Ainge has done as well as what he must do as Al Horford opted out of his contract and apparently is exploring other options. Most people thought when he'd opt out, it would be for a longer-term, less money yearly deal to remain with the Celtics. That doesn't appear to be at least the immediate case. Maybe this is negotiating. Then you have the Lakers who, shocker here, are trying to get rid of everything on their roster, with the exception, obviously, of Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Kyle Kuzma, in an effort to clear up cap space, they can go after a third star. But then you have the story of the Houston Rockets. Now, look, I don't know what to make of the Yahoo story, which came out yesterday in regards to the Rockets. Right? Because in the story, it says that James Harden told the Rockets, hey, him or me, basically, one of us has to go, and the him is Chris Paul, and that Chris Paul has had it up to here. No one says that anymore, by the way. I have had it up to here. Did your mother ever say that to you? I've had it up to here with this nonsense. My takeaway from the story is this. Chris Paul, much like the rest of us, can't stand watching James Harden play basketball. We all respect the points and the assists and the talent, but oh, boy, if I got to watch him go through his legs 15 times, drive in, throw up his hands in the air like he got crushed and hope to get a foul, I won't do harm to myself, but I have had it up to here with watching that. That's the general takeaway. Right. Stop me if you've heard this before, but Chris Paul is not the greatest teammate to get along with. Stop me if you've heard this before, but James Harden likes ISO ball and doesn't like to play defense. And stop, you've heard this before, but the Rockets lost at home. Mike D'Antoni didn't get to the NBA Finals. And James Harden came up short in the fourth quarter. All of these things have happened before. So, to quote a good friend of mine, Ryan Russillo, saw him say this on TV, which is, Chris Paul doesn't have to have said, I want to be traded, without wanting to not play with James Harden anymore, and James Harden's not going anywhere. By the way, Chris Paul, to his credit, earlier today said the news of him wanting a trade was news, quote, news to him. So things are going quite swimmingly in Houston, right? New owner comes in and says, you know, this is unacceptable. We want changes. They fired the entire assistant coaching staff. Clearly that the message gets through. I am so mad I'm going to fire the assistant coaches. Well, you go ahead. They have the virtually untradeable contract of Chris Paul. They have James Harden, who they won't trade. And they have Clint Capella, who you might be able to find a home for. And then you have this from Brian Smith, who's going to join us later on from the Houston Chronicle. The Rockets are expected to pursue Jimmy Butler and be aggressive in their pursuit, seen as an ideal fit on both sides of the court in helping push the Rockets to the top of the wide open West. And on paper, that sounds great, right? On And on paper is what the Rockets are about. On paper, they got screwed in Game 7 of, not this year, last year's Western Conference Finals, right? Because on paper is analytics and stats and numbers. They had a quest. Let's figure out why we lost to the Golden State Warriors. Felt like we got screwed in the officiating. And so the user analytics department determined that not only should they not have lost, they should have won by like 10 points. It wasn't even close, according to them. I mean, they did happen to miss, I don't know, 27 straight three-point shots. Did we? But we were fouled on a couple of them. We were fouled on a couple of them. There's no way we could have just missed all of those on our own. That the old adage, you live and die by the three, could actually be accurate. No. The Rockets are, we use the term paper champs wrong, right? They are the on-paper champs. On paper, this move makes sense, right? You're like, wait, we get Chris Paul, we got James Harden, we got Jimmy Butler. Here's a question. How many teams, if Jimmy Butler changes teams, I believe that'll be his fourth team in 4 years, correct? Right? Chicago, Minnesota. He's like Minnesota for what, a year and a half? Right? He's in Philadelphia for half a year. My math pretty good? That's, you know, this is like anybody can get divorced, man. Marriage is hard. It's not. And you know what? You can fall back into it and go, you got married the second time, the rebound person, whatever. You get married for the wrong reasons or at that time of your life. Two marriages, okay. You start getting married 3-4 times, be like, you know, maybe they're not the problem. I'm seeing a trend here. But the Rockets embody, and look, I don't want to make analytics the punching bag for everything that's wrong with sports, right? But sports is not just about the numbers. Case in point, the Houston Rockets. By the numbers, they should have beaten the Warriors going back to last year. By the numbers, Chris Paul and James Harden are actually way more effective offensively than either of them on the floor without the other. Like, it's not the stats, the analytics will tell you they are far more effective with Chris Paul and James Harden together, as they well should be. But sports isn't about the on-paper champs. It's not about some sort of mathematical calculation. If it was, then why weren't the Warriors better without Kevin Durant? The numbers told us that they were better. 33-1 without Kevin Durant. They're better without Kevin Durant. And I'm sitting here coming in to tell Colin, like, you know, it doesn't actually control who you're playing against because he sits against some of the weaker teams, their regular season games. Colin's best line, I think, in the last couple of years is that regular season basketball is the practice tee, is the golf range, the driving range of the NBA. Man, I am good off the artificial turf on the driving range. Who is not? I can shape shots. I can just pipe my drive, you know, 300 yards. You know what I don't do? I don't even hit the driver when I get out on a real course. Do you know why? Because I can't hit it straight when I need to. But the on-paper champs, this is a classic move of a team that would say, like, look, yeah, Jimmy Butler to Chris Paul and to James Harden. Yeah, but Jimmy Butler can't seem to get along with anybody. Chris Paul can't seem to get along with anybody. And no one likes watching James Harden dribble 50 times before taking a shot and then jump into people and try and get a call, which he won't get in the playoffs, even though he will get in the regular season, right? I mean, this is much like, are you guys familiar with the transitive property? Transitive property is basic math calculation. If A equals B and B equals C, then A must equal C, right? The transitive property doesn't work in sports. Well, we beat them and they beat this other team, so we must be able to beat the other team. That's not actually the way it works. It's just not. Math makes sense to people who don't get the subtle nuances of life and of sports. Look, in football, the numbers would tell you that you should always go for two. Ask Mark Helfrich how that worked out for him at Oregon. He's the head coach at Oregon. They played at Nebraska, I believe, and I think they went for two and didn't get it four consecutive times. And they had a litany of injuries, but he basically got run out of town. And one reason was like, well, he keeps going for two. Because even though the math would tell you, you should go for two every time, especially in college football where they make extra points far less readily than they do in the pros. And even now in the pros, obviously they had to move it back, which is, by my estimation, the greatest rule change in the history of professional sports. When you don't get it and go for two, even though you just scored a touchdown, you should be feeling nothing but joy and adulation and success. You feel kind of let down. It's a buzzkill. It's a buzzkill. In baseball, they'll tell you, you shouldn't bunt. The numbers tell you you shouldn't bunt. Did anybody watch last night? Dodgers, they beat the Giants 9-0. It's a 2-0 game in the bottom of the sixth inning. Chris Taylor comes up, runners at first and third. And you know what he did? He laid down the absolute perfect bunt. Right between the pitcher and the first baseman, essentially where second base should be, but second base was covering second base on first and third. And so the first baseman had to try and get it for the Giants. He could not. Scored a run, made it 3-0. Clayton Kershaw was lights out last night, and the Dodgers win 9-0. The numbers would tell you you should never bunt. Unless you're Chris Carpenter, and they put the shift on, and you bunt, and you get all the way to second base. Matt Carpenter, you get all the way to second base. I'm not completely, I'm not cutting the credibility of numbers as showing us different ways to accomplish a similar or better success rate. They're valuable. But there's a reason that Chris Paul, whether he wants out or he's just ticked off, or the reason they don't win is because they don't like each other. And you can't explain that on a spreadsheet. The reason Jimmy Butler is going to probably be on his fourth team is because either he doesn't like guys or they don't like him. He's a very good player. I mean, he does take his own car, does his old Uber XL to every game, which ticks guys off. You know, he has his kind of own thing going on. Numbers can't explain that. Numbers can't explain why at some point in time, bunting is, in fact, the right thing. At some point in time, you just kick the extra point even though you could go for two. And the Rockets are the on-paper champions, but not the real champions for a reason. Because games aren't decided on spreadsheets. Chemistry doesn't sometimes. It always, always, always matters.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Colin's back on Monday. As I think he planned out smartly, the idea was, hey, NBA finals are done. There's a bit of a before free agency. But we haven't had that. Right? We haven't had it. Anthony Davis gets traded on Sunday, so Colin's like, all right, I'll push back vacation. Then he's gone yesterday, and suddenly the Houston Rockets have massive chemistry issues. The Boston Celtics appear to be not just losing Kyrie Irving, but Al Horford, and the ramifications of the Lakers trade, as well as a trade of Mike Conley, now a member of the Utah Jazz. As Ricky Rubio, a free agent, told the world that he wasn't a priority of the Jazz, and now we know why. A long-rumored trade has, in fact, been consummated. Chris Mannix joins us from Sports Illustrated course, he has a new pod out. I was just looking at his tweet, which talks about many of these topics. So this is not the first time he's discussed, just the first time he's discussed with us here on Fox Sports Radio. Minix, let me get your thoughts on the Anthony Davis trade. Obviously, the Lakers finally get their man, but the old question is, at what price paradise? They get to hold on to Kuzma, but not a lot, if anything else. What do you think of the deal from the Lakers' perspective?
Yeah, they gave up the store. There's no question about that. But I thought the Lakers were in the same kind of position that Oklahoma City was in 2 years ago, that Toronto was in last year, where their need to make a deal trumped kind of any serious concerns about what they were giving up. The second they signed LeBron James last summer, they put themselves on LeBron's timetable. And if you look at LeBron as having 3 or 4 years at being somewhere in the neighborhood of the peak of his powers, you've got to add somebody. And they didn't have much chance of landing a big fish in free agency, so they had to acquiesce to the demands of the Pelicans with this deal. Now, could they have done a little bit better? Probably. I think if you survey the landscape and if they had held off a little bit, I think the Pelicans would have realized that the Lakers were their only real suitor out there. But they had to get their guy, and they got him.
So the latest story out of L.A. is that the Lakers are going to continue to try and shed as much salary as possible in order to land a third player, third superstar. Is Kemba Walker their primary target?
I think he's somebody they're looking at. I still think Kyrie Irving is somebody they're going to try to find a way to talk to, though I've been told pretty solidly that he's headed to one of the New York teams, and the Nets believe he's headed their direction. But it's going to be a guard, obviously. And Kemba, I think what it comes down to with Kemba is just how do the negotiations go with Charlotte? I mean, what kind of offer does Charlotte put on the table on July 1st? I don't believe it'll be the Supermax, but I don't think Kemba is necessarily tied to that Supermax. I think he'd like something over the max, but you know, we kind of get locked in on this idea that if a guy's eligible for the Supermax, he has to get it. It's not really the case. If he gets somewhere in between, I think Kemba stays in Charlotte. He's got such a strong bond with that community that if he gets the money, I don't think he goes anywhere. So I think the Lakers are going to hope that those negotiations get derailed in some way and Kemba becomes available.
What do you make of the Yahoo story about the struggles with chemistry in Houston?
I don't really know I don't know what's true, what's not. I've been told pretty strongly that the relationship between Harden and Paul, while you know being damaged somewhat at the end of last year, was not was unsalvageable, irreconcilable. I have been told, and you've seen Daryl Morey be very strong about this, I've been told privately too that he has not requested a trade from them. So I think the relationship is strained, to say the least, based on the end of last season. But I don't think it's irreconcilable, and I don't think the Rockets – first of all, the Rockets can't move him. Like, that contract is too onerous. But even if they could, I don't know that the Rockets would do it. I still think they believe that this group, can make a run out there. Now, what they've been doing with Mike D'Antoni is strange. I mean, they have to figure that out. And I put some of that on ownership and what Tillman Fertitta is doing as the new owner in Houston. But if they can figure out the D'Antoni stuff and get him signed to some kind of extension – you have to look at the landscape, Doug, and say the Rockets are, at the worst, the co-favorites to come out of the West with the group they currently have.
You would think, right? You would think they look around and go, wait a second. The Lakers have three players. We've been at the doorstep, and now the Warriors are maybe not dead, but they're going to have to regroup for at least a year. And, I mean, Oklahoma City still trying to find a way to get rid of Steven Adams. They have their playoff limitations. No one believes that Portland can be any better than they were. Maybe Utah's slightly better. But, yeah, I'm with you. But there is something to the fact that they – how much of it is they can't move Chris Paul even if they wanted to, so they might as well make Chris Paul not available via trade as of now?
I mean, I think both things can be true. They can't move Chris Paul if they wanted to. I mean, I guess they never say can't because all it takes is one team to – think that Chris Paul is the missing link to what they're doing, and you get creative, and that's about as creative a front office in Houston as you'll see in the NBA. But I don't know that it's just about not being able to trade him. I do think that there's some in the organization that believe they can put this together, and that Harden and Paul, as the foundation, are better with the guys they have around him than anything else right now in the Western Conference. I mean, look at the teams you named. I mean, I think Portland, depending on what Nurkic does when he comes back and how he comes back, they might be able to take another small step forward. But Oklahoma City is vulnerable. I think the Warriors are going to take a massive step back, obviously. It's just there, Doug. It's there for them to take if they can find a way to make all this work.
What do the Warriors do? Well, let's start with this. What does Kevin Durant do?
I still think Kevin Durant is going to one of the New York teams. You know, that's been the prevailing sense I've gotten, you know, from people that know him for a while now. And I don't know. I mean, a lot's clearly changed in Kevin Durant's life with this injury, but does this injury make him think that a 5-year contract for the Warriors is the way to go? Or does he have enough confidence in himself that at 32 years old, he can still piece together a great career and maybe get another contract on the back end of it? These are questions that only Kevin Durant can answer in the aftermath of that injury. But everything I was told before the injury was that one of the New York teams was where he's going to wind up. And I have not heard anything to indicate that's changed.
Chris Mannix joining us from Sports Illustrated. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. Okay, so let's say he goes to New York. We assume they re-sign Klay Thompson and they just kind of sit tight and start to rebuild their bench. Is that their plan B?
I think it has to be at this point because there really aren't a lot of attractive alternatives. I mean, if you bring back Klay Thompson, it's going to be on a max deal. You've already got Steph Curry on a max deal. You got Draymond Green making real money. You're very limited in terms of your flexibility and what you can do. I mean, I think the biggest question that Golden State has to answer next season is what do you do with Draymond Green? I mean, Draymond's going to be a free agent in 2020. You assume next year maybe it's a playoff season, but it's not going to end in a championship. It's not going to end in a trip to the finals. So you go into the summer of 2020, and Draymond's going to be looking for real money. This is probably going to be his last significant deal as he hits 30 on this new contract. If you're the Warriors and you see what Draymond is right now and you sort of play out what he's going to be in 2020, do you want to be the team that gives him that? Or do you turn around and look for maybe 75 cents on the dollar with players and draft picks that could benefit you with how you build around Curry and Thompson? I mean, those two guys are going to be the next 5 years of this Warriors team. If you don't believe and you don't want to pay Draymond, who is, let's be real, he is kind of a depreciating asset to that team. Still a great player, but the shooting has slipped, and defensively he's great against fours now. When you talk to scouts, he's not great against fives anymore, and he's not as great against threes anymore. So do you want to pay him, or do you want to try to get pieces that make more sense around Curry and Thompson? I think that's going to be a big decision for Bob Myers and that staff, either this summer or into next season.
What's your take on what's going on in Boston, where Al Horford opted out? Most people thought he'd stay at a reduced rate, but a long-term contract. Now it looks like he's looking elsewhere. I have my own thoughts, but I'm curious of yours.
Look, I think Al Horford wants to stay. If all things were equal, I think he'd want to be there. He's got a tremendous relationship with Brad Stevens, with Danny Ainge, with that entire organization, with the city of Boston, frankly. He's developed a pretty strong bond with. But Al Horford and his agent aren't idiots. I mean, they know that this summer has a summer of 2016 feel to it, where there are going to be teams with this max and double max cap space that don't get the guys that they want and will turn around and have a 4-year close to or full max level offer ready for Al Horford. So if you're Horford, you're not going to take like a 3-year, 60-ish million dollar deal from the Celtics if there's a much bigger contract that's out there for you to take. So that's kind of my big takeaway from it. It's not that Al Horford wants out of Boston the same way that Kyrie Irving wants out of Boston. He just wants to get paid, and I don't think the Celtics are willing to give him that 4-year high-level contract to do it.
I've heard almost the exact same thing, that it's not that the Celtics don't like him. They do, but the Celtics, yeah, they can't sit there and go like, hey, we're gonna shell out everything for Al Horford. We're not that close. We lost Kyrie. Gordon Hayward's not where we thought he would be before he joined the Celtics. We're not that close. he's not the icing on top of the cake. So it's not that we don't want him. We're just not going to give him some huge contract at this point in his career because it doesn't make sense for us.
Right. And it's crushing for Boston. I mean, you lose Kyrie, and it creates a lot of questions, right? Like, maybe you bring back Terry Rozier and see if you can rehabilitate him into the player we saw in the 2018 playoffs. I don't know if that would work. But even if he's something close to that, second year post-injury, Gordon Hayward's going to be better. And this guy's a great ball handler, great playmaker. There was a window for the Celtics to really surprise people next year, to win more than 50 games. And depending on what happens with the teams above them, with the Torontos, Milwaukee's, Philadelphia's, maybe even put themselves in the mix to be a conference threat. But without Al Horford, I just don't know how they'll do it. I don't think they'll be terrible, but I think they'll take a pretty significant step back.
Kawhi stay in Toronto or go to the Clippers?
Man, your guess is as good as mine at this point. I mean, all I know from talking to Raptors people is that they feel they've done everything. And, you know, the obvious things, which is winning a championship, but also behind the scenes, treating him like a franchise player, you know, the load management stuff, the medical staff, they feel like they've done everything there. One thing Raptors people tell me often is that they hope that these playoff moments resonate with Kawhi Leonard, not just winning the championship, but the Game 7 ball bouncing winner and against Philadelphia, winning the conference finals in Toronto's home floor, the parade and being part of a crowd of 2 million people winning a championship. I don't think there's illusions in Toronto that they're going to be able to get Kawhi to sign a 5-year deal. They'd love to have it happen, but I don't think they believe it. But I think that their only sliver of optimism here is that Kawhi wants to come back on a 2-year deal or maybe 1+1 to maximize what's left of Conley, Gasol, and the veterans on that team. But even that, it still feels like the Clippers are the leader in the clubhouse.
Kyrie, any chance of the Knicks, or is it all Nets?
I think there's a chance, but I think there's probably going to be, if there hasn't already, been conversations between Kyrie and Kevin Durant about what they're going to do. Because Kyrie to the Nets alone makes zero sense. The Nets are Boston light. They're coached by a reasonable facsimile to Brad Stevens, who believes in all the same things that Brad Stevens believed in, which is all the things that Kyrie Irving kind of chafed at over the course of the season. He just isn't built to care as much about the regular season as Brad Stevens and Kenny Atkinson are. So I think it's got to be Kyrie and somebody else. Kyrie, I'm sure, would love to play with Kevin Durant in Brooklyn, but if it's not Durant, it's got to be a Tobias Harris. It's got to be a Jimmy Butler. If you just bring Kyrie in, and we all know that D'Angelo Russell's not going to be there if Kyrie's there, but if you just bring in Kyrie alone, I don't know how that makes sense for the long-term interest of the Nets.
I'm with you. I'm with you. They had such great chemistry. You do run. On the other hand, they probably think, hey, we fixed D'Angelo Russell, we can fix Kyrie Irving, but it's a completely. There's got to be somebody we're not talking about, right? Like, we keep talking. Everybody's talking about the same teams: L.A., two L.A. teams, two New York teams, Toronto, Milwaukee, like Dallas, the Heat.
Yeah.
There's somebody out there who's going to make a big splash. Who is it?
Well, I mean, Dallas is the one you'd point to just because of their cap flexibility and their history of chasing free agents. And I've heard Al Horford's name connected to the Mavericks as one of the potential suitors, which, again, makes some sense. Bring Porzingis back. You have Horford in the front court with him alongside Luka Doncic. That is a tremendously skilled three-person combination there. So Dallas, I think, would be the one team that's lurking out there that could be a factor with all these top-tier free agents.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
There are people, some in my industry, many are just fans, that are gleeful, that is full of glee, at the thought that the Boston Celtics and their championship aspirations are no more. Right? And some of this comes from the fact that the city of Boston, though the Bruins lost in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, because the Red Sox are defending World Series champions, because the Patriots are defending Super Bowl champions, because the Bruins are defending, do they call it Eastern Conference? What is the, I have no idea in hockey. I swear to God, I know the Conn Smythe Award. That's about, I know the Stanley Cup. I don't even know the breakdown divisions anymore. But, I mean, like, look, Boston, professional sports-wise, has been killing it, right? So, I think some of it comes from an anti-Boston sentiment. Some of it comes from the fact that the Celtics are run by Danny Ainge, and when Danny Ainge was a player, he was pretty much the least likable dude of anybody who's a Celtic hater out there. He's like, well, he was that guy. I'm trying to think if there is that guy in the NBA now. Right? Like if Grayson Allen, who was just traded from Utah to Memphis, if Grayson Allen had massive, massive game, because Danny Ainge is a good player, then you would say, all right, that's Danny Ainge. I'm trying to figure out, there's the way you hate Draymond Green is the way people hated Danny Ainge. He's just one of those guys that would say whatever, do whatever. You're like, I hate that guy. But if you're a Celtic fan, you're like, dude, Danny Ainge is awesome. Yeah. So I think some of it comes from the fact it's Danny Ainge. Some of it comes from the fact that it's Boston. And I think some of it comes from the fact that they seemed so close and were able to remake themselves after winning a championship, and people have thought they've gotten a pass for flaws. Maybe there's this thought that they made Isaiah Thomas play when he's hurt, right? Like, there's a lot of anti-Celtics sentiment out there. One of it is, well, they made Isaiah Thomas play when he was hurt. Like, okay, maybe that's what happened. Or maybe Isaiah Thomas was in a contract year, thought he had a chance to make $100 million in an upcoming offseason, was an MVP candidate within their system, and he wanted to get back out and play and prove to people that he was healthy enough to play so that it wouldn't hurt him when his contract came up, and he ultimately cost himself, I don't know, $100 million or so. So whatever it is, I do think that it's okay to point out that there's some anti-Celtics sentiment. But what I've heard over the last 24 to 48 hours is, well, the Celtics. I mean, what has Danny Ainge really done with that trade? What has he possibly done with that trade? And congrats on all the draft picks. You won the offseason. You won the draft. You didn't win any real games. And you're never going to get any free agents because nobody wants to go to Boston. Now, I'm young, but I wasn't born yesterday. And I seem to remember in 2016, Al Horford was available. He was a member of the Atlanta Hawks. He was an unrestricted free agent. And a lot of people thought he would go to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Why? Thunder were close. Thunder coached by Billy Donovan. Right? The Thunder were trying to hold on to Kevin Durant. Remember that? They're trying to hold on to KD. At the time, the thought was, well, maybe you get Al Horford. Brings you more shooting at the center position, steadiness, professionalism. Oklahoma City didn't even get a meeting. They went out and traded for Victor Oladipo. That's what happened. And Al Horford signed with the Boston Celtics as a free agent. And people thought, you paid too much. Why? Because they're Boston, because Danny Ainge, because Brad Stevens a college coach. I don't know. The very next year, the Boston Celtics, the same Celtics who, they don't get free agents. Do you guys remember who the prize was of the 2017 free agent class? Anyone? Yeah, that was Gordon Hayward. They got him to go along with a wealth of draft picks, young players, talent. They were returning Isaiah Thomas from the year before, who was going to come off of a hip injury. That was before they traded for Kyrie Irving. And when they traded for Kyrie Irving, the logic behind the trade was he fits in with our timeline, with our plan, with the age of our players. Like, it was a great plan. Do you guys remember what happened? Yeah, Gordon Hayward broke his leg in half in the first 2 minutes of his game with the first game with the Celtics against the Cleveland Cavaliers on national TV. So, did the plan end up in a championship? No. Did the plan end up in an NBA Finals appearance? No. But even if you want to say that, look, when you traded for Kyrie Irving, you could have known something would go wrong with his knee. Okay. Like, I have never heard of a player in the NBA having metal that holds together their kneecap that had to be removed. That was initially what he had done. It was bothering him when he was playing. He had metal taken out because it was holding the screws kind of together as the kneecap, which had broken in pieces in game one of the NBA Finals back when he played with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first NBA Finals. That was what he had taken out. And then when they did that, then he had an infection in one of the screws. So they'd take that out, clean that out. But even if you said, like, look, Kyrie, he had the toe in college. He had a litany of injuries when he was with the Cavs. You had to know that Kyrie Irving would break down. Okay, I'll go okay. But if any of you armchair quarterbacks, if any of you Twitter gangsters saw Gordon Hayward as possibly who had never had an injury, breaking his leg in half in the first 2 minutes of his first game at the Celtics, dude, you need to go to Vegas. Nostradamus has nothing on you. And you read now articles where they're like, well, the reason that Brad Stevens lost the team was he kept playing Gordon Hayward early in the year when he wasn't ready. Like, yeah, okay. Look, I understand the Gordon Hayward thing. One, Gordon Hayward is a former player for Brad Stevens at Butler. So even though he's not the son of the coach, there are going to be guys who are like, yo, they're boys from way back. There is the white guy element to it as well. That's the reality of not just Boston, the NBA, but anywhere in the NBA. Well, you know, he's a white guy in Boston. He's going to play. There's also the reality of how much money he makes and jealousy. And guys are like, look, I'm better than him. He's making a bunch of money. He's only making money. He's only playing because he's making a bunch of money, which is real. Even if you took the actual reality to how anybody who runs any NBA team was probably thinking, which is like, look, we know Gordon Hayward's not good now. We know that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum may be better than him now. But we've seen Gordon Hayward be an all-star before he got hurt. He was an all-star in the West before he got hurt. We saw that. Right? So we know what we think Jason Tatum can ultimately get to that, but we know what Gordon Hayward has been in the NBA. So if we bite the bullet now, maybe by the end of the year, he'll be back to the Gordon Hayward of old. And there were some signs, but it wasn't meant to be. Look, truly what's happening with Al Horford in Boston is this. Danny Ainge is not an idiot. He has won seemingly every one of these trades. And he didn't go and get Anthony Davis. Yeah, because you know what he's not willing to do? He's not willing to do what the Lakers were willing to do, which is sell the farm for one player. Because he's seen that not work in New York. He's seen it not work elsewhere in the NBA. He didn't have to do it in order to build the big three in Boston. He didn't have to do that. And so instead of selling the farm to get Anthony Davis, they're sitting there reasonably going, well, Al Horford is 33 years old. Why would we give him 4 years max money? One, he's probably not worth it. Two, that's the act of either desperation, which we're not, or aspiration to win a championship, and we're just not there. We lose Kyrie Irving, we're not a championship team. He's got great character. He's a very good player. He's solid. But you know what he's not worth? Just like Anthony Davis isn't worth trading off all of your primary assets for one guy when you have a good, strong, young nucleus that you can build around, Al Horford is not worth giving a max contract to because you're not one player away from winning a championship. You're just not. Tell me the trade that Danny Ainge has lost. How'd they get Jason Tatum? They had the number one overall pick. They traded back to the number three pick. The number one pick didn't play in the NBA last year. And maybe you could say, well, no one could have seen the Markelle Fultz thing coming. That's fair. But they seem to do pretty well with that one. They trade away nothing to get Isaiah Thomas and then trade away a broken down Isaiah Thomas to get Kyrie Irving. Go through it. He's been so good that no one wants to pick up the phone because you feel like, whatever Danny Ainge does, he's going to try and win this trade, which he should do. Danny Ainge as a GM is Danny Ainge as a player. If he's your GM, you're like, you know what? He doesn't waste money on a team that's not going to win a championship. He pockets resources. He recruits good players. He's got a really good coach. And he gets more out of his team than he could. Like, dude, they were good. Then they tanked. Then they got good again. What am I missing here? You don't like him because what? He boondoggled your team in a trade? And you can say to me, well, they haven't won a championship. And you're right. You're right. They haven't won an NBA championship since 2010. But they've been to the conference finals three other times. During the last 5 years, they've been to the playoffs all 5 years. And if you want to compare them to all the other franchises, the Bulls have been to the playoffs, what, once? The historically good franchises. The Lakers have gone through the six worst years as a franchise. The Knicks, do you want me to start? Any punchline, any joke can end up with the New York Knicks, and you're like, ha, 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 right? So if he was your GM, you'd be like, all right, I'm in. Whatever he does, seems to have a plan. And when it doesn't go right, like Gordon Hayward breaking his leg, he seems to try and figure out the problem with a reasonable solution. So instead of wasting money on a player that's not going to get you closer to a championship, he's going to rethink things and let somebody else get a really good player. Be very careful of dancing on the grave of the Boston Celtics and Danny Ainge. It's been done before. People have thought they've gotten over on him before. Go through his trades. Tell me one he's lost. When you're consistently in the playoffs, when you manage your money well, when you have good young talent, even when the chemistry goes awry, you stop, you take a breath, you figure it out, and you don't have a Chris Paul contract or a Joe Johnson contract that you cannot trade, that you cannot move. And that's why they're swallowing hard and letting somebody else, like the Dallas Mavericks, overpay for Al Horford. Because either desperation or aspiration, and they are neither.